Hi, I'm Tess Vigeland. Global markets tanked again this week. What happened?
Is everybody seeming to realize all at once that, hey, we've got a big problem here?
And apparently nobody thinks that $700 billion bailout was the solution. Recession is in the air. Meanwhile, if you're worried about the repo man coming to take your house, be even more worried about the guy who offers to rescue you and your deed. There might be a villain under that superhero suit.
The person to whom they're transferring it is taking out a much bigger mortgage on their house and cashing out all the equity, and then there's no way that the original homeowner can get their home back.
And we meet some small business owners who are taking things down a notch.
I'm in the penny profit business, so I tighten my belt every day.
Those stories and more as we continue our coverage of the fallout from the financial crisis on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, this is Marketplace Money. You've heard the old saw that when the U.S. economy sneezes, the world catches a cold. Well, there's been some talk over the last few years that because of globalization, that no longer applies. If the U.S. gets the sniffles, there's always China or India or Europe to keep things healthy. Well, the U.S. economy heaved one whopping honk of a sneeze this year, and now the world's caught pneumonia. I'm Tess Vigeland. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com.
Are we at the point where a 500-point drop on the Dow is just business as usual? I mean, when you've been through 600, 700, 800-point swings, what can possibly be surprising anymore? Maybe not surprising, but still stomach-churning if you've got any money left in stocks. There was something of a worldwide sell-off this week, another one, as investors absorbed all kinds of nasty corporate earnings news. I don't understand why that's a big surprise to anyone. So for some explanation and context, we've brought back our own Bob Moon, Marketplace's senior business correspondent. Nice to have you on the show again, Bob.
Good to be with you. Wouldn't be any other place.
Oh, thanks so much. We wouldn't have anyone else here with us to help catch us up on what was another wild, wild week on the world stock markets. What is going on?
Well, before we get into the latest horrible sequel to The Nightmare on Wall Street, let's just pay homage for a moment to Alan Greenspan.
All right.
He testified on Capitol Hill toward the end of this week, as he had for all those years that he served as head of the Fed. And perhaps this will come as some consolation to all of us who watched our portfolios and our 401ks shrinking even more this week. Mr. Greenspan insisted that even he has been caught off guard by all this, that he's in a state of shocked disbelief that lending institutions somehow didn't protect shareholders' equity. Now, if you check the internet right after that for reaction to that remark, there was more than one disbelieving comment about that sounding a little familiar. I managed to dig up the line that they were comparing it to.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Ah, yes, Captain Renault from that famous scene in Casablanca.
Yes, and that brings us to another phrase from that movie that was apropos this week, the fundamental things apply.
Ah, I hear the tickling of the ivories
in
the background.
Yeah, the markets keep playing it again, Sam. We're getting tired of this tune, though, right?
Jeez.
Something very different this week, though. The market's ups and downs weren't so much driven by the fear about whether the rescue plan might solve the credit crisis, as everybody seeming to realize all at once that, hey, we've got a big problem here. We're heading into what looks like a very painful and potentially extended recession.
Okay, well, my reaction to that, duh. I mean, how could anyone be surprised that this week we had all kinds of bad earnings reports? It's been coming, hasn't it?
When have you ever known the folks on Wall Street to be rational, though?
Yeah, never.
Yeah. Remember, the old timers will tell you over and over, the stock market is governed by two emotions, fear and greed. We saw greed at play even right up until the last earnings go round. Can you remember what was happening just a few months ago, Tess?
Yeah, earnings reports were bad, but everybody was thinking, oh, but it's not as bad as it could have been.
That's right. Even the bad news looked good then, because we were all expecting things to be bad. And if it wasn't quite as bad as anticipated, that was good enough to push stocks up. Wall Street seemed to be seeing a silver lining in everything. Now there's a gray cloud attached even to the silver linings here. We flipped that on its head. Even when there was a little good news this week, it somehow looked bad. Now investors seem to be looking at all these lousy profits and the big layoff plans, and they're saying, sheesh, maybe this really is as bad as it looks.
Yeah, sheesh is the word, isn't it? I want to ask you about one particular earnings report. American Express had a not-so-pretty one this week and, in fact, warned that we might be seeing problems with credit cards just like we've seen with mortgages, lots of late payments.
Perfect example of good news that you could read as bad news here. Its profits were down, but they were better than expected. On the other hand, cardholders are now failing to repay loans at almost twice the rate of a year ago.
I want to ask you also about the world markets. You know, we talk a lot about the Dow and the NASDAQ and the S&P 500, but of course, this is a global economy. And what we saw toward the end of this week was just a massive sell-off on a worldwide scale. On Friday, the Tokyo Nikkei was down, what, almost 10%? Mm-hmm. Europe down more than 5%. Why is this kind of now really starting to bleed into other stock markets?
Well, I think they're also seeing big fears of a recession, maybe even worse over in Europe in particular. So much for diversifying into international stocks, right?
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Well, let's try to find a little bit of positive news out of this week. I heard maybe we don't have to worry as much about our investments in money market mutual funds.
That's right. That's where the Federal Reserve shifted its focus this week. It's going to provide as much as $540 billion backup financing. Here's what's been happening. Nervous customers have been pulling out a lot of money from these money market mutual funds, half a trillion dollars in just the past few months. And those funds have had trouble selling off their investments to raise the cash quickly for all those redemptions. So here's what the Fed is going to do. It says it's going to help be the backstop buyer so these funds don't have to unload all their investments at what are essentially fire sale prices. That really has knocked down the value of a lot of those funds. Hopefully that will bring some stability to the money market funds. And really, the big aim here is to encourage them to start investing again, which is another way of saying start lending money to all those businesses and those government borrowers who need it. They count on that as a big source of short-term credit.
Well, there was some other good news. Oil prices keep dropping. What, $65 a barrel or so at this point? I remember way back in July when it was, what, 147?
Yeah, it sounds really good. You could call that good news. But what's not to like in oil prices getting close to where they were back to the beginning of last year? They've dropped $40 a barrel just in the past month, and they fell again on Friday, even though OPEC announced a cut in output to try to shore up prices. But if you really think about that, OPEC cuts production and prices fall. That is really, really bad news, because what the market is signaling here is that investors see such a serious recession ahead, there's going to be far less demand for oil. So this is definitely news that is not good to the last drop.
Oh, Bob, I'd like you to leave the studio now, please.
Okay, I'm out of here.
Just kidding, of course. Thanks so much, as always.
Thanks, Tess.
Marketplace's senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com. And by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by saveandinvest.org, helping military service members and families manage their money with confidence by providing unbiased financial information, tools, and more. Online at saveandinvest.org.
This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. So, what are we supposed to do? You keep thinking the worst must be over, that the collective actions of the Treasury Department and the Fed and central banks around the world, it's got to stem the tide of red ink all over our retirement savings and our college savings. You pull all your money out of the markets and you'll miss the rebound, we're told. But we wait and watch for things to get better, and it just gets worse. So let's turn to our own economics editor, Chris Farrell, for some advice. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Tess.
You know what I think we all need from you is a little hand-holding. So I'm going to ask you to kind of walk us through once again, and I know we touch on this all the time, but talk to us about what we should be doing and thinking and not doing and not thinking as we watch global markets collapse.
All right. This is extremely important. First of all, just, you know, take that pause, take that proverbial deep breath. You don't want to panic. You don't want to lose your nerve. You don't want to adopt a bunker mentality. At the same time, you don't want to be passive. You want to take some actions that you have control over. You and I, Tess, and the people listening, we have no control where the stock market's going. I know where I'd like it to go. I wish that investors would listen to me, but they're not going to. So here's my checklist in times of panic, because that's what's going on in the financial markets. First of all, where are you vulnerable? You know, are you carrying a lot of debt? All right, if you are, don't panic. But you know what you're going to have to do over the next period of time is pay down your debt. But let's say you're not carrying much debt, which I have a feeling is most of our listeners at Marketplace Money. So the fact that your 401k, your 403b is down, what percent number would you like to use, Tess? 40%?
No, I've sworn off looking. I haven't looked since like July.
All right, so it's down 40%. But is that really going to impact you on a day-by-day basis? It impacts you psychologically. It doesn't make you feel good. You feel poorer because to some extent you are poor, but you're not vulnerable. So let's just sort of put that aside and look at where are you truly vulnerable. If you have a lot of debt, that's where you are. We're going into recession. I have no idea whether this is going to be a short, shallow recession or a really deep, bad one. I lean toward deep, bad one, but who knows? But we're going into recession. What's your job situation? What can you do at work? There you have control. You're a valuable employee, or maybe you're not as valuable as you'd like to be as an employee. Well, make yourself a more valuable employee. So let's focus on the things that you can control where you can reduce your risk. And I got one other thing to toss in there, Tess.
All right.
Don't be afraid to think about opportunity. Now, let's say you're not carrying a lot of debt and you're working on your job front and you're still involved and engaged with your family. Remember, there are going to be opportunities that come along because inflation's going to be down during a recession. There are going to be bargains out there. And I'm not talking about borrowing money and taking lots of risks. I'm saying don't be afraid of a downturn. We've been through, what, 11? This is going to be our 12th in the post-World War II period. And what we've learned is the big mistakes that people make during a recession is obsessing about the things they can't control, ignoring the things that they can control, and then missing opportunities that come along the line. So don't panic. Reduce your risk in your household, and then look for opportunities if you have some cash that will come not tomorrow, not next week, but in the coming months and year.
All right. Thanks so much, Chris. And we'll talk to you in a bit with some more questions for getting personal. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
The big worry in this credit crunch is that companies won't be able to borrow for things as basic as making payroll. But at least one small business is coping by keeping things simple.
All I'm trying to do is keep my attitude good. I'm just trying to smile at my customers.
We'll talk to three small business owners as we continue our coverage of the fallout from the financial crisis. And if you're looking for a bright way to cut costs as the economy turns cloudy, consider going solar.
My utility bill for all of last year was $44.08, and that included my house and my car.
We follow a guy who figures out if those sun-soaking panels will work on your rooftop, coming up on Marketplace Money from American Public Media. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland, continuing our coverage of the financial crisis. The big boys on Wall Street are getting all kinds of attention these days, but the credit crunch and its aftermath are also taking a toll on Small Biz USA. We spoke this week with consultant Roger Casey of AFI Accounting, Finance, and Insurance Services, and he says if you're thinking of starting your own business, first, don't expect overnight success.
The things that most people don't realize when starting a small business is that they can't expect some losses in the first 1 to 2 years.
And he says the current economic climate isn't going to make things easy on anyone, especially startups.
They may have some trouble gaining a credit line or even a credit card from a bank. They may also have a credit line in a household or reduced. You never know what's going to happen 1 to 2 months down the line.
And his thoughts on what may happen down the line?
My projection for the future would be somewhat bleak for the overall small business environment, although I think it really boils down to their own efforts and planning and doing things the right way.
But what is the right way? Every small business is different, right? Well, next we're going to visit with three small business owners to get their take on the crisis. Ken Leadham is a consultant in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Taz Vass runs a grocery in Colorado. And Christian Bratton owns a pool maintenance company in Houston, Texas. Christian, I'll start with you. Are you changing any strategies, doing anything differently to deal with the economic slowdown?
Absolutely. One of the goals that I had going into this was that I was not going to have a large credit base. I did not go out and seek an SBA loan. I do have lines of credit with our suppliers. And so making sure that we've got great communication with our suppliers so that if their lines of credit get cut, by having cash savings, cash reserves, go to them directly and buy this stuff or just start shopping around. As the pool industry as a whole, we're already focusing on what's coming up in summer. So we're always at least 6 months ahead of everyone else chronologically in the year.
Okay. Well, how about you, Taz? What's your business and how's it doing during the financial crisis?
I co-own the Dolores Food Market, and it's in Dolores, Colorado. We run a little small grocery store in a small town. Mostly my growth rates that I've been maintaining the last 4 years have maintained, and our costs have gone up on the other side. We have fuel surcharges on invoices that we didn't have 2 years ago. They're exceeding $100 a week from our suppliers. So that's one cost that we've had. But on the other hand, we take care of our customers, and we haven't seen the economy affect us much.
Really? You know, Christian was talking about some of the credit issues, you know, that she's made sure to tamp down on any lines of credit that she had going into this this economic downturn. How about you?
I've been COD on my groceries forever, and I've run my cash business. I don't have any issues with credit.
Wow. Do you extend credit to your customers?
No, I don't.
Interesting. Okay. How about you, Ken? Tell us a little bit about your business there in Pennsylvania.
Well, I do manufacturing and software consulting for small companies, and I'm self-employed. It's just me, and I support software for a couple different companies. And what I've found is that a business like this kind of runs on a pipeline of orders that are coming or projects where they're improving their methods that they would bring me in on. And what I've found is the pipeline pretty much has been slowing and shutting off. And I've seen people putting off or deferring business with the uncertainty they feel they can hold off a little bit longer.
Have you always been in business for yourself?
On and off the past 5 or 6 years, yes.
Let me ask each of you if you're doing anything differently to help generate business during this economic slowdown. Christian, are you doing anything differently in terms of marketing or reaching out to new customers?
Absolutely. With the economic downturn, we have been pushing and pushing. In fact, I just had a trade show last Friday where we got at least over 150 business cards to different associations and management companies. And of course, getting out there and meeting with brokers and trying to get new brokers on board with having us take care of their pools. And
all these steps are in addition to what you've done in previous years. These are a little different.
Yes. I would say that there's been a larger push for more business and really put on a campaign for potential clients.
How about you, Taz? I know you said that your business is actually doing quite well despite what's going on in the larger economy, but are you doing anything different to ensure that it stays that way?
All I'm trying to do is keep my attitude good. I'm just trying to smile at my customers. As a retail business, I'm the only one on the panel as a retail business. We're open every day. We take care of the customers we have in the store right this minute.
Okay. How about you, Ken? Anything you're doing to try to generate more business as the economy slows down?
Well, with me, a lot of times what I'm trying to do is encourage people to commit to my services and much of what I'll do is offer lower rates, or I'm at a client today that instead of flying to, I drove to, it would save them some money. And I'll basically offer to eat some rates or some expenses to try to sweeten the deal and to make them feel like they can, you know, they can afford my services.
And can you afford to do that?
I can afford it better than not having any of the business. So I'm willing to tighten my belt while there's some uncertainty. And I know a lot of my clients are scared and they're worried about expending money that they don't feel is necessary if they can help it right now. And I think I'm just going to try to ride it out.
Well, let me follow up on that as kind of a final question for each of you. How do you feel about the future of not just your small business, but small business in general, as we try to kind of get out of this big financial mess? Ken?
Well, a lot of small businesses are the type of clients that I work with, and they do seem to be functioning. They seem to be working okay, but they seem to be scared. I think we'll do fine long term. I think it's a matter of an overall confidence measure that we need to see. We'll hopefully proceed as usual.
And Taz, how about you? I know you said you're trying to just keep positive. Is that, are you feeling positive about the future?
Well, yes. I worked through the 9/11 recession, and that one was really painful. And I'm in the penny profit business, so I tighten my belt every day. I watch all my expenses and stay in front of my pennies, and so we're busy because of it. So I have all the confidence in the world about the future.
And Krishan?
I'm very positive about our future. I think that we've diversified. I think that we provide a service that is never going to go away. And if a neighborhood does decide to get rid of their pool and in place put a playground, we fill those pools in as well. So I'm quite positive. But I do agree that for small businesses in general, I think there is a fear because you see their neighbor business fold or consider closing. And so, of course, that does shake the bones a little bit. But overall, we are quite positive that we're going to make through this economy and whatever comes our way in the future.
Krishan Bratton is in Houston, Texas. Taz Vass is with us from Dolores, Colorado. And Ken Leadham joined us from Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Thank you, all three of you, for telling us a little bit about your businesses and how they're surviving the downturn. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks so much.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com. And by Gather.com, where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter most. People are talking about the economy at Gather.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
It's time for Getting Personal, and back with me again is our own Chris Farrell. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing well, Tess. So what questions do you have today?
We have quite a few. As you know, our inbox has been overflowing these last few weeks.
You are a master of understatement.
Yes, as we deal with the financial crisis. Well, today we'll start with a question from Joe in Columbus, Ohio. Joe, may I ask, are you a plumber?
No, I'm not a plumber.
Okay, what do you do there in Ohio?
I'm an engineer.
Excellent. Well, what kind of advice can we give you today?
Well, I will be retiring the same time my son graduates from high school. I have a 401k that I need for my own purposes. I'd like to know, how can I protect my 401k, and how will it affect my son's ability to get financial aid for colleges? I don't want to simply be reassigning my 401k over to some college somewhere.
No, that would not be good. You don't want your retirement going into college coffers. Chris, how does a parent's 401k play into the whole college borrowing picture?
You know, Tess, in general, when it comes to financial aid, Joe, the assets don't count. Hmm. Essentially, most colleges and universities, they take a protective stance toward the 401k, the 403b, the retirement assets. They may count a little bit of it, but it's not going to hurt your son that much.
So, Joe, what exactly is the timeline for you? Will you be withdrawing those funds as your son is in college?
as my plan stands now, I will turn 66 the same year he graduates. I would be planning on withdrawing the 401k and in some form. I'm not sure whether it would be an annuity or some other plan at the time.
Okay. And also, just to toss in here, my guess, since most people in retirement, their income goes down. Typically, you're withdrawing less from your 401k or your various sources of retirement money than you were making as a salary. So in that sense, you could even come out ahead because you're retired, withdrawing some money. So your quote-unquote income is going to be less than it is, say, right now.
May I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
As I understand, when you fill out paperwork for financial aid, they go by Euro data, such as last year's tax forms. Should I retire a year early so I'm already on fixed income?
Probably not, because the money that you earn will be much greater than what your son will save or will make on the financial aid side of the formula. And the other thing to remember is that your son, he's at the very beginning of his life. So if he borrows a fair amount of money or ends up having to borrow more money in order to get his college degree, you know, he has a long time to pay it off. So he has a lot of flexibility going forward. You have less flexibility. So I take advantage of earning income as much and for as long as you can.
Well, that's good information. That puts me at ease a little bit.
Well, good. We're always glad when we can do that. Thanks so much. That was a great question, Joe. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too. Thank you.
All right. Next, we have an email from Pat, and she's in San Diego, California. Chris, like a lot of people, hopefully most people, she is getting ready to vote. And her question is on how to vote in this economy. Her ballot has several bond measures, which she says she might have supported in a different economy. But of course, now she's very concerned about whether the local community or the state can realistically afford to take on the kind of debt that these bond measures would cause. So any advice on how to vote? We don't generally give political advice on the show, but it certainly does have a personal finance tinge to it.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not going to tell anybody how to vote, but a lot of people are going to be facing these bond measures. And for the next couple of years, if I'm right, and I think a lot of economists are expecting we have not only a recession, but then we come out of the recession, a slow growth economy. Mm-hmm. Think of what's happening to a lot of state and local governments right now. Tax revenue is down. And most state and local governments have to balance their budget. So they cut programs. They lay off people. Tax revenues go down farther, right?
Right.
So you lay off more people, you cut more programs.
And more services.
Exactly. So one of the few things that state and local governments can do to counteract the recession or the downturn, since they don't have access to the printing presses like the federal government, is they'll borrow and they'll go out and do infrastructure projects. So you'll be repairing roads, building schools, all kinds of infrastructure projects. And it's a good countercyclical move. What I would be doing is take a look at the particular projects, because that doesn't change. Is this a good project? Should this be done? Will my community benefit? But as a general rule, it is not a bad move for state and local governments to step up their spending on those infrastructure projects, borrow because it's an investment and then it'll pay off over time, and to at least keep some activity or at least support some activity in the community and the state.
Okay. So there you go, Pat. Hope that helps. And of course, the most important thing is that she's planning to vote. Bravo. We hope that everyone else out there is planning to do so as well. If you've got financial questions, theoretical or practical, do leave a message for us 24 hours a day at 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY. And we spell that M-O-N-Y. Or write to us. You can do that at marketplace.org. Just click on the Getting Personal link there. And Chris's blog is open 24/7 as well with more answers to your questions. And we'll be back with more Getting Personal later in the show. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. The $700 billion Wall Street bailout package passed by Congress a couple of weeks ago had all kinds of goodies attached to it, including some greenbacks for green energy. The bill included an extension of tax credits for renewable energy projects, including wind and solar power. On this week's A Day in the Work Life, we go roof climbing with someone who may benefit.
Barbara. Come on in.
I'm Paul Scott. I'm 55 years old, and I sell solar for a living. So the good news is when I drove up, I took a look at your roof, and I got my compass out, and you've got a perfect roof for solar.
Great. That's good to hear.
I travel to people's houses and I take a look at their energy bills to see how many kilowatt hours per month that they use. And then I try to determine if their homes or their properties would accommodate a solar photovoltaic system that would generate enough electricity to offset all or most of that usage. All right, so you want to go up on the roof now?
Terrific.
Got my trusty ladder. You can use solar power pretty much anywhere. It's really a matter of the cost of the energy at the local utility level and any state or federal rebates. And if you have a combination of good rebates with high energy prices, then you've got all that you need from an economic standpoint to make it work out. I started doing a little research back in 2002 on my own solar system. But what really got me going was I had heard about these electric cars that were available at the time. And so we actually purchased a production electric car from Toyota. And so we had just installed the solar system on the house, so all of our electricity was coming from sunlight. And now we had this car that actually ran on sunlight. My utility bill for all of last year was $44.08. And that included my house and my car. Every time I would tell people my personal story, they would just buy the system. So I was able to sell a lot of systems that way. The solar power industry is on a very fast growth trend right now. My company, for instance, has literally doubled in size in 1 year. We really can't hire enough people right now to handle all the work that we've got. A salesperson in the solar energy business could easily make over $100,000 a year. And that's with a combination of a base salary and commission. I had one particularly good experience with a client who called me up and said that he had a solar system, but he wanted another one. And I asked him, well, why are you doing that? And he said, well, I bought a Tesla Roadster, and now I want to add solar to my system so that I can cover my Tesla's driving. The Tesla Roadster is an electric car that actually accelerates 0 to 60 in 3.9 seconds. And I thought, this is great. This is exactly what people are going to be doing in the future. So I love that particular one. Plus, I'm going to go back and get a ride in his Tesla once he gets delivery on it.
That was Paul Scott, car enthusiast and solar panel installer. A Day in the Work Life was produced by Klaus Andreasen. Most of us with 401ks, so-called defined contribution retirement plans, well, we know exactly how things are going with those plans. Not good. But what if you're in a pension?
If you're a civil servant, a teacher, a firefighter, there is no federal government protection standing behind your defined benefit plan.
Our coverage of the financial fallout continues. You're listening to Marketplace Money from American Public Media. This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. I'm Tess Viglund. Just in case you've forgotten, this whole financial mess started with bad mortgages. And those bad mortgages have led to record numbers of foreclosures. The website RealtyTrack reported this week that foreclosure filings in September were up 71% over last year. The head of the FDIC said this week that the government needs to do more to help those people stay in their homes. Plenty of other groups are out there advertising that they can help. But Marketplace's Elisa Roth warns to proceed with caution.
This is Queens Village. It's a lower middle class neighborhood in eastern Queens, populated mostly with single family and semi-attached houses. Off the main shopping drag, the neighborhood feels suburban. Squealing kids, chirping birds. But the neighborhood has one of the highest foreclosure rates in the city.
The house is a normal family house.
Joy is desperately trying to avoid becoming the neighborhood's next foreclosure. Her lawyer agreed to let her talk to me on the condition I only refer to her by a nickname. She bought her house 30 years ago.
He's on dining room, living room, kitchen, bathroom and downstairs, bathroom upstairs, 3-bedroom and the attic. And the basement is finished basement.
She bought it for $48,000, but refinanced the loan a couple of times.
I never take no money from the house for me. for myself. Always take it and fix the house over, do things that have to be done.
By 2003, her mortgage was around $270,000, which meant her payments were $2,000 a month. To make the money, she's been working three jobs as a home health worker and nurse's aides, double shifts, 6 days and nights a week. But it all fell apart when she got sick a couple of years ago.
I failed to pay the mortgage. So when I call option one,
the mortgage servicer,
to ask them if I can pay them, see if I can send them 1 month, they said they won't accept 1 month. I have to send them all those 3 months. I wasn't able to pay all those 3 months at once.
Joy was desperate and terrified that option one would take her house away. A friend told her about a place called Home Savers. She went and talked to the owner, Phil, who promised he could save her house. All she had to do was temporarily sign over the deed to somebody else, a man named Blaze, and he'd take care of the payments for a year. It's a classic foreclosure rescue scam.
What they don't tell the person is that they're transferring their deed.
Jessica Addy is an attorney with the nonprofit South Brooklyn Legal Services.
The person to whom they're transferring it is taking out a much bigger mortgage on their house and cashing out all the equity, and then there's no way that the original homeowner can get their home back.
That's exactly what happened to Joy. Blaze and Phil took out a new mortgage worth almost $500,000. They pocketed more than $100,000 and ended up doubling Joy's monthly payments to around $4,000 a month. Addy says she sees these cases all the time.
I had a client who had a $200,000 mortgage on her house. She was suffering from Alzheimer's, and somebody said he would help her keep her home. She transferred her deed. He took out $1.9 million in mortgages on her house, and he kept the $1.7 million in difference. Obviously, there's no way that she can then get $1.9 million to get her house back. So it's a way for people to strip all the equity that people have in their houses and take away any chance they really have of keeping their homes.
Addy says the scammers use all kinds of tricks to lure their prey. They solicit door-to-door, they visit churches, they bombard victims with flyers promising to save their houses. Oda Friedheim is an attorney in the Queens office of the Legal Aid Society. She says to avoid being tricked, you need to be skeptical.
What we urge is not to believe that somebody can sell you the Brooklyn Bridge or save a home, to really scrutinize these deals and never sign anything that you do not understand or haven't read.
Get your own independent lawyer. Many scammers provide their victims with the services of a lawyer. He may even be a real attorney, but it's a safe bet he's in cahoots with the scammer. Attorney Addy says most important of all is not to let the desperation of the situation convince you to do something you shouldn't.
When you're in foreclosure, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have no options. Some of these people, if they had come to our office, we could have helped them refinance into a lower interest loan.
I asked Joy why she hadn't done that. She said she just wasn't thinking straight.
When you talked to Phil, did you have any reason to not believe what he said? Did you feel at all?
Ma'am, when you're in trouble, no matter what people tell you, they're going to help you, you just see the help. You don't see the consequences. You just see, well, are you going to help me? That's fine. No, that's all. That's the way you get me.
Queens is hardly the only place that's seeing this kind of illegal activity. Housing advocates like Friedheim and Addy say big cities all over the country have seen more of these tricks lately as foreclosure rates keep going up. Easy credit and high home prices made these scams particularly lucrative, so a tighter credit market and falling property values may help get rid of them. And states are starting to wise up. Following the lead of several others, New York recently passed a law designed to protect homeowners from these kinds of cons. But homeowners still need to watch out for themselves. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace Money.
Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com. And by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build stronger customer relationships through email marketing. ConstantContact.com. Marketplace Money is supported by FINRA Investor Education Foundation, helping inform today's investor through innovative grant-making and educational funding. Online at finrafoundation.org.
All right, it's time for more Getting Personal, and we're continuing to dig deep into the mailbag. Okay, more like scrolling through our email inbox to answer your questions. And Chris, we've got a question from Zenobia in Chicago. We caught up with her at a retirement planning session there, and she just retired in June. But she's already thinking about going back to work, not because of the economy, but just because she wants to stay busy. She's not planning on making a whole lot of money. And here's what she wants to know.
If I do decide to get a part-time job just for fun, how should I invest that money? Because I can take that money and invest it in something to give me a benefit and a benefit for my grandchildren.
Well, first of all, I love the idea that she's going to go back to work just for fun. But what would you suggest she do with this money?
Oh, I have a couple of suggestions, but I just want to add to what you just said. You know, going back to work for people who have retired, I mean, sometimes people have to do it for financial reasons. Mm-hmm. But another part of work is it's a social life. It's your brain is engaged, your body is moving, and there's all kinds of research that says what Zenobia is doing is really good for her health. Mm-hmm. It can be a very good thing.
So what does she do with her money?
Well, it's sort of has the universe of things to do, particularly as she mentioned her grandchildren.
I smell a 529 plan coming on.
Well, we got a 529 plan is a great way to save for their college education. It's just terrific. I-bonds, I have to put the plug in for the I-bonds. I mean, I love the inflation-protected savings bonds and no commission costs. I'm going to also give my perhaps favorite idea. Now, I think as you probably picked up, Tess, I'm an optimist.
Yes.
And I really do believe 15, 20, 30 years from now, thinking about our children, I believe that the economy will be much better, will be much wealthier, will be a very innovative and vibrant economy. If that's the case, one thing for everybody to think about who is in a situation like Zenobia, what if you just bought for your grandchildren the total stock market index? I have no idea on the timing. I have no idea whether this is bottom or it's not bottom or whether bottom is 20% from now. But if you continue to put little bits of money into S&P 500 equity index fund or just buy the whole thing, the whole index, the whole stock market, my bet is that when the grandchildren need the money to buy a home or pay for their college education or maybe even their retirement, it's going to be worth a lot of money.
All right, there you go, Zenobia. Lots of different options for you, and good luck on that job hunt. Let us know what you end up doing. I'd be curious. All right, we've got an email from Paula in Northampton, Massachusetts, and we've heard you say that you can trust Treasury bonds, but she's wondering if they are an option for every situation. And she writes, if an employer has the company 401k account set up with a particular mutual fund company, can an employee move their account into government securities if they're not on the company menu? What can you do if the investment options you do have seem a little too risky? Can you go outside of the plan? I'm guessing the answer is no.
Typically, most plans don't offer employees that option. So let's just assume, you know, it's one of these plans where you've got 9 to 10 options and that's it. In order to keep the cost down, what you do is you pick the really conservative bond fund. Now, there's going to be a bond fund option in there that's going to invest primarily in treasury bonds, treasury bills, treasury securities. Might be some high-quality corporates mixed in there, but it's going to be very high quality, very conservative, and it is a mutual fund, so it will fluctuate in value. Absolutely, there's no question about that. But the underlying securities are safe, and if you're nervous and you want that safety, that's where I would go.
And finally, Chris, we've been getting lots of questions about that age-old commodity, cold, hard gold. And one email came in from Ned in Melbourne, Florida, and he asks, because of what he calls the great bailout of 08, he wonders what our advice would be on having gold in an IRA.
I am not a fan of gold in a retirement account in any form or fashion. I've been consistent about this. Now, gold has also had a remarkable run-up, and it's been bouncing around between $800 and $900 an ounce. And if we ended up with a great inflation, gold would appreciate in price. Why don't I like gold then? It's a pure speculation. It's not an investment. So in your retirement account, I want real assets. So I like bonds because they have a rate of return. I like stocks because they have a rate of return. If you want to speculate on gold, I would do it outside of my retirement account, because if you lose money,
At least you can take it off on your taxes.
And I wonder if we also all should have learned a lesson this year when commodities were in this big bubble. Everybody was all excited about, you know, buying metals and buying, you know, all kinds of other commodities. And then all of a sudden that bubble burst. And if you bought it on the upswing, you could have lost a lot of money.
Yes. Commodities are very risky. They're very volatile. Again, when it's your retirement account, when you're taking hard-earned money, I mean, you work hard for that money. You're taking a little bit of that money and you're putting it aside for your retirement. You want that money to be there.
All right. Unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for questions for this week's show, but you can call in with your questions anytime. Our number is 877-275-6669. That's 877-ASK-MONEY. And you can email us. Go to marketplace.org and click on the Getting Personal link. Chris, thanks as always for the sound advice.
Tess, you're welcome.
This is Marketplace Money from American Public Media. One of the questions we're asking throughout the Wall Street meltdown is, what are you doing? Yes, you, and other people who are deciding whether to change the way they save and invest. In this installment of the series, we check in with one of our listeners.
My name is Robert Latson. I'm 69. I'm retired from General Motors. And here's what I'm doing. I'm presently sitting around waiting for my retirement checks to come in. The way General Motors is talking about bankruptcy and merger, I hope there will be a retirement check. Seems to me that all the people who's in power has gotten their money, and us poor people or middle-class people, we're the ones suffering and paying for all this. Well, I had invested in various investment plans through General Motors, and I found now that as I take money out, the Internal Revenue wants to tax my retirement money. I'm afraid to touch it anymore, so I'm just floating along. Hopefully, I might have to get another job someplace. I don't think nothing has really changed as far as my lifestyle. Of course, I'm a fighter. I'm sure I'm able to go out and do whatever it takes to survive. Last year, I was riding high. I was able to go to the movies. Now I have to watch my pennies.
Not all General Motors employees have pensions like Robert Latson does. A few years ago, GM switched to 401ks for new workers. Well, this week it announced it's temporarily suspending matching contributions, and many more companies are expected to follow suit. As for the pension, it's fast becoming the dodo bird of retirement plans, but many of those who still have them, they wonder whether they're faring any better than 401ks. Olivia Mitchell teaches risk management at the Wharton School. Welcome.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
Are there protections built into pension plans like there is, FDIC insurance for bank accounts and SIPC for stock investments? What kind of protections do you have if you're in a pension plan?
Well, it depends on which type of pension you are in. Under U.S. pension law, defined benefit programs that are offered in the private sector are insured by a government entity known as the PBGC. That's the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. And they pay some benefits in the event of a corporate bankruptcy up to a cap. So, for example, if you were retiring at age 65, the most you would get back from the government insurance agency is about $52,000 a year. Now, in the public sector, if you're a civil servant, a teacher, a firefighter, there is no federal government protection standing behind your defined benefit plan. So how secure it is in that case depends on the ability of the state to pay the bills.
And again, if you are in a traditional pension plan, a defined benefit plan, there's nothing you can really do at this point, right? You can't just take your money out.
Well, something like 60% of corporate defined benefit plans do permit you, with the employer's permission, to take a lump sum instead of a life payout at the moment that you retire. Now, the conditions under which you can do that are fairly strict. The plan has to be well-funded, for example. Otherwise, it runs the risk of looting the plan and ruining everyone else's prospects.
And in terms of, you know, your ability to influence the health of your pension plan, I suppose, You know, the one thing that you do have with a 401k or a 403b is control, for better or for worse, over your own investments. But if you're in a pension, you can't just call up, you know, the person managing it and say, put everything into treasuries.
The typical structure of a defined benefit plan is that the employer names the fiduciaries. Those are the people who are the trustees of the plan. And by and large, your average Joe the plumber has very little influence on the corporate pension asset allocation. What's interesting is that defined benefit plans and defined contribution plans have had a very similar asset allocation over the years, about 70% in equity. And so, yes, it's true that people in the 401k environment suffer an immediate shock. If you're in a corporate defined benefit plan, there probably is a lot of underfunding happening right now that the company is going to have to cover in the near term.
Olivia Mitchell is a professor of insurance and risk management at the Wharton School. Thanks so much for helping us out today.
Thank you.
And that's Marketplace Money for this week. Next time, we visit a community bank that's been around for 100 years. Their advice on how to make good loans is to only loan to good people.
We know them. We know their businesses. We see them at the charity functions. We might see them at the church. We might see them at the temple.
That story plus our continuing coverage of the fallout from the financial crisis. Marketplace Money is produced by Nancy Fargali with Jim Wallace, Stephen Hoffman, Eve Troh, and the rest of the Marketplace staff. Our theme was composed by Mark Governor. The executive producer of the program is J.J. Yore. Remember, talk to your own expert before you make any big money decisions. I'm Tess Vigeland. We'll see you next week.
Want to hear something on Marketplace Money again? Help is as near as your home computer. To find audio archives of past programs and information on transcripts, just go to the internet and log on to our website. The information you need when you need it is only a few clicks away. Just point your browser to marketplace.org. Marketplace Money is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider that offers products and planning tools to help their nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com.
American Public Media.